This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has an expansive and varied mission. Managing its resources efficiently and effectively, and as one DHS, is key to its successfully meeting that mission. It also requires the department to pursue a focused procurement and acquisition strategy that more effectively aligns resources and DHS strategic objectives. What is the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's acquisition strategy? How is DHS enhancing its acquisition oversight? And what is DHS doing to better manage its resources and execute its overall mission? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Dr. Nick Nyack, Chief Procurement Officer within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Welcome, Nick. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is George Gruzer. George, welcome.
Thank you.
Nick, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you can provide us with essentially the history and mission of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and its Office of Chief Procurement Officer.
Yeah, thanks. I guess sort of to start out, I'd like to say I've been with the department now for about 11 months. And coming in, we have very strong leadership across the board, but in particular in my area, acquisition from Secretary Napolitano, Deputy Secretary Lute, who's also our chief operating officer, and the Undersecretary for Management, Rafael Boris, who also wears the hat of chief acquisition officer, which is very important in my world. Specifically, the mission, as all of us know, is to ensure that the homeland is safe, secure, and resilient against terrorism and other hazards. Specifically, within the chief procurement officer office, as well as the component acquisition personnel around the department, we spend nearly $20 billion a year, and that's 46% of the DHS discretionary budget. Our current focus is on sort of three phases in acquisition: requirements, definition, the procurement process itself, and then finally managing programs.
Nick, given DHS's critically important mission, I want to understand the operational scope of the DHS portfolio. How is the department organized, the size of its budget, number of full-time employees, and can you give us a sense of its geographical footprint?
Yes. So as we commemorate the 10th year anniversary of 9/11 and the establishment of DHS, much progress has been made to create one DHS. And some specifics are DHS budget, in this sort of rough order of magnitude, $55 billion with a discretionary budget of $42 billion. So of the $42 billion, we buy people and we establish contracts. People, we have about 230,000 employees. Seven operational components under the DHS headquarters structure, and people are all over the United States, and we have a footprint internationally as well.
Wonderful. You sort of alluded to it earlier, but I'd like to get a little bit more into your specific role as Chief Procurement Officer within DHS. What are your specific responsibilities and duties? Maybe you can give us a sense of the areas under your purview, and how do you support DHS's overall mission?
So under me, there are 1,400 contracting professionals spending nearly $20 billion a year. We have roughly 18,000 long-term contracts and 98,000 contract actions that are performed by these 1,400 contracting personnel. My procurement workforce provides support for 500 programs that directly impact the DHS mission.
Nick, regarding your responsibilities and duties, can you talk a little bit about the two or three biggest challenges you have?
Well, I guess first thing I'd have to do is say thanks to all the previous CPOs who were here before me. So there was Greg Rothwell, who was the first CPO, and then Elaine Duke, followed by Tom Essig, and then Rick Gunderson acted for 18 months in the role. And all of them did a significant amount of work that I am sort of building upon what they had put in place. The three challenges I sort of put into my four priorities, or I kind of look at them as four broad areas of challenge that we have. One is people, two is contracting, three is program support, and the last one is industry government communication, which is a priority that I've established that I want to institutionalize within the department. Specifically in people, we need to have the right people. The business that we do, acquisition, all of the contracting actions, 98,000, gets done by people. We have to have quality people, so that is my first priority. My second priority is contracting. There's a ton of things we have to do in contracting, very specifically fiscal austerity, which means I've got to find ways to enhance competition, reduce high-risk contracts, and basically get a good deal for the government. The third one is program support. So we're not in the business of just awarding contracts. We award contracts to support programs that then meet the mission of the agency. So what are we doing in the contracting community to enhance program support? And there's a number of things that we're doing there. And then the last one is we want to engage industry at the appropriate points in the acquisition process so that ultimately, again, we get a better deal.
You said you've been with DHS for 11 months. I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit about what you did before you came to DHS.
Yeah, so I began my career in industry bidding on defense contracts right out of college. Then I came into the government with the National Science Foundation, where I began to award contracts, and then moved over to the Internal Revenue Service, where I spent 19 years awarding contracts, essentially doing every role within the acquisition process, and ultimately ended up in IRS, working directly for the IRS commissioner on a very specific project that was outside of acquisition but involved acquisition because we needed contractor support. There was a gentleman who flew a small plane into one of our buildings in Austin, Texas, as a result of that tragedy. The commissioner wanted to do a review of all of our 660 IRS buildings. I was selected as the project executive to do that. I was working that when this wonderful opportunity came about. Many people encouraged me to come to DHS, and I came to DHS for several reasons, knowing that it is a tough place to work, but knowing also that the mission is critical, and everybody who works in DHS is very passionate about the mission.
Nick, given your experience, what's the characteristics? What are some of the essential characteristics of an effective leader?
The characteristics are paying attention to the environment and change, focusing on employees, customers, and results. Great leaders promote leadership at all levels. We can, and I view leadership from many perspectives, and I'll just give you the example of the earthquake that we all recently experienced. When we were experiencing the earthquake, what I saw was obviously I have my leadership role in making sure that my employees reach safety. In addition to that, I was able to view many other people in between who were acting as leaders to ensure that all people who were in the area reached safety or were safe in general. So you can always observe leadership at all levels, and I try to pull from all of that. I think an effective leader is also a winner. So I'm a tennis player. That's what I enjoy doing. In that sport, you have to, again, sort of do everything it takes to win, which is also the same sort of qualities that you need in successful leadership. You have to take a look at the environment. You have to pay attention to change and plan for that. You need to treat people, your employees, extremely well. You need to take care of your customers. And ultimately, you need to drive business results. In my world, that means I've got to be able to demonstrate we're getting a good deal for the government.
Well, I'd be interested to know, who has influenced your leadership style and management approach?
I would say it is my observation of leadership in many people. So I could point to some specifics. I certainly could point to the one that's closest to me, which or my parents. When it comes to leadership, or risk is a big part of that. My parents came here in 1961 without a penny and without a relative, and actually lived and sort of made the American dream. So risk-taking was something that I grew up around, and business. We had small businesses, so all that it takes to be successful in small businesses. We actually had nursery schools, so you know, that's people's most precious commodity, and you know, you've got to really demonstrate leadership in that particular business across the board if you want to be successful, and we were. But again, I would just say I've observed leadership and continue to in everybody at all levels, and it's the same thing that I try to promote in our organization across the board, is we need everybody to lead.
What is the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's acquisition and procurement strategy? We will ask Dr. Nick Nyack, Chief Procurement Officer within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What are the seven management imperatives all government executives need to know? How is DoD improving its business operations? What is FAA's next generation air transportation system, or NextJet? How is New York City shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And what about power, security, and leadership in the 21st century? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Nick Nyack, Chief Procurement Officer within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Also joining us from IBM is George Cruiser. Nick, most people may be a little bit familiar about certain functions like finance, accounting, IT, but not so much about procurement function that the government does. Specifically, what are the key elements of acquisition management from front-end solicitation to post-award, and how does the procurement function fit into it all?
And it's important to sort of know what is the difference between acquisition and procurement. And very simply put, procurement is a subset of acquisition. And acquisition can be defined very simply as three parts to the entire process. The first part is sort of knowing what you want and then defining it into what we call a requirement. The second part is, after you have that requirement, then you want to send it out to industry for bids on that, and that begins the procurement process, or the second phase. And then the last phase is, presumably, if you get a successful contract award, then you begin the program management as well as the contract management, and ultimately deliver something of value. So, you know, just for instance, let's just take, for example, something that most people can understand. In TSA, you would have the machines that screen folks as they go through the airports. How would that work in the acquisition process? Well, you know, you would have the requirements definition phase. You would go out for procurement for those particular machines. You'd have a competition. You'd have a contract award. Doesn't end there, however. The machines have to be installed in the airports. Life goes on. It has to be tested. And we have to ensure that they work ultimately to create a safer airports across the nation.
Right. So I was amazed at this. The acquisition spend for DHS has increased some 66%, $8.5 billion in 2004 to $14.2 billion in 2009. And the numbers of large, complex acquisition continues to increase. What I'm interested in knowing is the overall acquisition strategy of your department. And more particularly, what's the composition of your procurement portfolio, and how does it differ, or is it similar to other federal agencies?
So we've got some very impressive statistics in this area. The majority of our procurements are fixed price. Of course, we're trying to reduce our high-risk contracts. We have 64% of our contracts in FY11 through August that have been awarded as fixed price contracts. DHS procures more services than supplies. Roughly about 70% of what we buy are services. Our top five services are guard services, research and development, information technology services, professional and engineering services. Our top five supplies are ships, boats, aircraft, IT equipment and software, and security systems. Over the last few years, more than 80% of our procurements have been competitively awarded, which helps us get a better deal ultimately. In addition to that, in our profile, we have, as all other federal agencies have, small business goals, and we have done consistently very, very well in this area, scored an A on SBA's Small Business Administration's scorecard. We are one of the top spenders in government, DOD, and then we are in the top three consistently year in and year out. Our small business overall goal is one of the highest in government at roughly 33%, and then we have all of the other statutory goals underneath. We are in very good shape in fiscal year 2011 to meet or come close to almost all of those goals, but in total, hopefully earn another A from the Small Business Administration.
Nick, clearly you acquire an awful lot of things, and as you said, are one of the top spenders in government. I know that the DHS leadership has sought to improve the department's overall acquisition management process. Can you tell us a little bit about your efforts in this area? And specifically, I'm interested in how you're focusing on strengthening the capabilities and requirements development process to better support the department's strategies and priorities while enhancing program execution.
This is a very exciting area for me. Coming into DHS, there was essentially some acquisition enhancements that had been driven by Deputy Secretary Lute and Undersecretary Boris. And they primarily had to do with the first and the third phase of the acquisition process. So going back to requirements definition and program management. Here are some of the things that we actually have in motion that are really going to strengthen capabilities, requirements, as well as program management at DHS. One is the realignment of an organization that was under me and now will directly report to the Chief Acquisition Officer, Undersecretary Boris. And that organization is going to be called Program Accountability and Risk Management. And that will essentially oversee all of the major programs, and in fact, eventually all programs at DHS. So where I oversee all contracts, the 18,000 contracts, the 98,000 contract actions, this office will oversee all of the major programs. As that realignment occurs and working with the undersecretary as well as all the chief officers, we're putting in place an integrated investment life cycle. Now, it's essentially what that means is we will have a joint requirements council-like body that will discuss requirements at the very, very beginning. There will be the budget process in between, which will be informed by this discussion, so you can resource up requirements as they're discussed jointly. And then eventually, as a program comes into existence, it will have been very carefully vetted. And then it gets reviewed by a review process. We have an acquisition, and this is all managed by the Program Accountability and Risk Management Organization. We'll have an acquisition review board, which reviews all major programs at certain gates. In addition to that, we will have executive steering committees for specific programs to provide even more oversight at a lower level, assisting programs. The Program Accountability and Risk Management Office will also implement a decision support tool. And essentially what that will do, and this is really cutting edge for a department, it will allow all of the decision makers at the department to have insight into the health of all major programs on a more real-time basis so that when we see a program that may be going south or that needs help, that we can rush to that program and provide the help. The last piece that the Program Accountability and Risk Management Office will be working on is a sort of a center of excellence. And so you've got program managers throughout DHS and all of the various components. And as they begin, they get trained up, they get certified. But as they're managing a specific program, they're going to need help. They're going to need help writing requirements. They're going to need help with various documents and cost estimating. And the Center of Excellence under the Program Accountability and Risk Management Office will be providing that kind of support. So we have a real holistic approach to managing programs, how they come into existence, and then how subsequently how they're managed.
I'd like you to tell us a little bit more about DHS's integrated investment lifecycle model that you referenced, and really understand the progress you're making toward improved decision-making, and a little bit about the analytics and tools you're using to support that model.
So just kind of going back over it again, if you kind of work left to right, if you could sort of visualize it, we'll have a strategy council, which at the very highest level of DHS establishes the overall strategy and direction for the department. Moving to the right, we would have a Joint Requirements Council-like body, which we will most likely call the Capabilities and Requirements Council, which will discuss very specific areas where we can bring together requirements across the enterprise, across DHS. Once we have that discussion, and let's just take an example. Let's take, for instance, ships. So if we had the discussion that ships are required to meet the mission, then the very next discussion is, okay, what are those ships like? Can we bring these requirements together? Should we bring these requirements together? Who should be the executive agent to sort of manage our need for ships? Once that decision is made, then we can go into the acquisition process, and we'll be really equipped to better inform and engage industry and therefore get a better deal on the front end. We'll also be able to budget better for this because we know exactly what we'll want. So you have the strategy council, you'll have sort of a JRC-like body, you obviously have the budget process, and then let's just say once a contract comes into existence supporting a program, as I mentioned, we'll have a whole bunch of support and oversight and much more real time. So program managers will be trained better, they'll have better day-to-day support. The oversight that we already have when I got to the department will continue on. There will be additional, more real-time oversight with this decision support tool that we're going live on in October. And actually, that piece in and of itself is probably the most cutting-edge piece in terms of program management at a departmental level outside of DOD, I would say.
One other area that I want to ask you about is in the when you're talking about program management, a lot is talked about of the importance of the governance model being used. So I'd like you to comment a little bit on the governance model being used across DHS and what improvements you're making to that model.
Yeah, I want to talk about the governance that we have around strategic sourcing, because strategic sourcing plays a critical role in terms of connecting with our Joint Requirements Council-like body, the Capabilities and Requirements Council. Essentially, what that is it's just smart acquisition. We look at our entire spend. So if it's $19 billion, if it's 98,000 transactions, we have the capability now to look throughout all of those transactions and say, can we be buying better? Now, of course, if that's decided up front through a joint requirements process, then that's the absolute best, and we're moving to that. In addition to that, we have our strategic sourcing program. And kind of the governance structure there in relation to strategic sourcing itself is, it starts with the Undersecretary for Management, Undersecretary Boris, who's responsible for establishing the strategic direction of our sourcing program. Another key player is the DHS Efficiency Review Team. They're responsible for improving the department's efficiency overall, and they've got a series of initiatives in place. My office is a key player in terms of governing the process. Then we also have cross-component advisory teams that are comprised of executives and senior leadership to help us in our strategic sourcing efforts. And then finally, from a working-level perspective, we have commodity working groups that are helping us to, again, combine our purchasing power across the enterprise.
So, Nick, I was wondering, with the size and complexity of your portfolio in terms of acquisition, how are you strengthening the department's capital investment process to assure that investment decisions are mission-aligned and cost-justified? And more importantly, what remains to be done?
So, as I referred to the integrated investment life cycle, when we get that in place, and so what remains to be done is to actually formally put that in place, and we're very close to actually putting that in place and institutionalizing it for the first time in the department's history. In terms of capital buys, they are challenging, but we do know how to do them very well. The challenges generally come with respect to the budget. And I'll just take an example of shipbuilding, for instance. So we've got several components who may need ships. So the first thing you sort of recognize is that you've got this requirement. Are there any similarities? Is there anything we can learn from that? That would be step one. That will be worked out in the new structure. And then the question is, okay, once you get down to buying ships, there is the process of buying that huge capital investment, and what is the most efficient way in doing that? And you may have heard recently about our purchase through the Coast Guard. There's a series of ships that are part of the deep water program, but one of the larger vessels that had been bought, we're buying several of them over several years. And typically when you buy ships, they go on an assembly line, and the more you sort of do them as quickly as possible through the assembly line, the greater the efficiencies in terms of the learning curve, the labor that you can actually gain. And our challenge always is, generally speaking, the budget to keep things moving along. But we've been generally successful in the short term while we put in place this new sort of governance investment life cycle structure in actually getting a good deal. We manage the day-to-day while we put in place something that we can institutionalize that will allow us to have even better oversight of capital buys as they begin in the process.
Well, picking up on the oversight issue, I was wondering, what is DHS doing to strengthen its program and project management discipline within the department?
Yeah, one of the Undersecretary's key program and project management enhancements was the establishment of this organization called Program Accountability and Risk Management. It was a simple realignment of about 40 people who had been working under my organization. And again, the Undersecretary is the Chief Acquisition Officer for the department. And essentially, acquisition is what? It's contract management and it's program management. And by realigning this organization to directly report to the Undersecretary, we have very, very clear roles between contract management and program management. So that is definitely yielding tremendous results that we're going to see very, very shortly here in the beginning of the next fiscal year. Those are the implementation of the integrated investment lifecycle, the implementation of the decision support tool, which again will, for the first time in the department's history, give us insight into there's about 82 major programs, DHS-defined major programs. Those are programs that are over $300 million lifecycle. If you look at how OM, the Office of Management and Budget, defines major programs, we have 135. And if you look at our total programs in DHS driving the mission, there's more than 500. The goal here is to have all 500 be in this decision support tool so that decision makers throughout the department can see the health of these programs real time, because we're going to be working in a constrained budget environment, and we're going to have to look at programs and very closely look at their success to see which ones we can continue, which ones we're going to have to tweak, and possibly which ones we wouldn't continue.
Nick, there's something you've mentioned a couple of times. You've referenced Undersecretary Boris as the Chief Acquisition Officer. I was wondering if you, for our audience, could help them understand the distinction between the CAO and the CPO.
Yeah, that's a great question. The Chief Acquisition Officer, typically in a cabinet-level agency, is a political appointee, so first and foremost. The Chief Procurement Officer is also known as the Senior Procurement Executive and is always a senior career executive service. So there's the first distinguishing feature. Again, as I mentioned before, there's the difference between acquisition and procurement, and procurement's a subset of acquisition. So the Chief Acquisition Officer is responsible for everything in the acquisition process, the success of contracts and the success of programs. Again, we've got it very clearly defined now within our structure because we do have Undersecretary Boris is the Chief Acquisition Officer. Any contractual issues come to my organization, the Chief Procurement Officer, and any programmatic issues are addressed by the new Program Accountability and Risk Management Office. The Senior Procurement Executive typically fills behind the Chief Acquisition Officer if the need arises.
How is DHS enhancing its acquisition oversight? We will ask Dr. Nick Nyack, Chief Procurement Officer within DHS, and our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen? How is the U.S. Department of Homeland Security turning its one DHS vision into a reality? What is New York City doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And how is the DoD improving its business operations? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Hear from FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, DHS Undersecretary for Management Raphael Boris, New York City Deputy Mayor for Operations Stephen Goldsmith, and Dave Winogrand, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at DOD, Professor Joseph Nye and General Anthony Zinni on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century, and seven management imperatives that government leaders should pursue to be successful in an era of fiscal constraint. All of this and so much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Nick Nyack, Chief Procurement Officer within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Also joining us from IBM is George Kruser. Nick, you mentioned earlier in the previous segment strategic sourcing as a viable platform for acquisition. Could you elaborate more on your strategic sourcing program, and more particularly, what are you doing to expand its use to more expensive technology buys?
Our strategic sourcing program, led by a gentleman named Mike Smith, is one of the most successful in government and has been recognized as such. Just some general statistics. We have about 30 strategically sourced contracts in place for things such as ammunition, IT services, office supplies, IT hardware, and administrative services. Since we began the program in 2005, through our strategically sourced contracts, we've saved about $1 billion for the department. Again, this year we plan on saving about $200 million. I think we can move that up to about $500 billion a year if we can come through with all of our strategic sourcing initiatives over the next several years. And again, what is strategic sourcing? Very simple. We have 9 operational contracting offices in DHS, 1 in each one of the components, and then 2 who report directly to me, 1 who buys all of the things for our headquarters office, and another one who does classified procurements. All of them have a number of buying transactions that occur every year, and the total now is about roughly 98,000 transactions. We have a tool that looks at these transactions and translates it into something where we can see opportunities. We then take those opportunities, and through a very careful, well-thought-out business case process, we look to see what can we strategically source. One interesting area that's come up is detection equipment. So we've got several of our components who use various detection equipment to meet their missions. The question is, what of all of that detection equipment can be strategically sourced? Can all of it, can a portion of it? That's why you do a business case. At the end of the business case, and many good people work together on this, we end up coming up with a strategic sourcing opportunity. And those go on over time. And then we also play a role in the federal strategic sourcing initiative. So in office supplies, we were a leader in helping the Office of Management and Budget put that particular initiative in place, and we use it. We're a large user of the Office of Supplies contracts. We will also assist OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, at the government-wide level on print management as well as wireless services as those initiatives come into play. We will continue, however, to constantly look at our own spend. Essentially, this should drive us to fewer contracts, better deals, and allow my workforce to focus on these bigger deals versus doing lots of transactional buying.
I'd like to spend a couple of minutes focusing on the people. One might say that good business deals are dependent on having a highly skilled and motivated acquisition workforce. Could you tell me a little bit about both the challenges that you have and some of the things you're doing to build and sustain a highly motivated workforce?
This is an area I spent a lot of my career in, and one of the many reasons I came to DHS was because within my organization, the Chief Procurement Officer, we have an acquisition professional career program. It essentially is an intern program, and we have 200 acquisition intern types who are going through a rigorous program, and they are going to be the next generation of acquisition professionals. And I will tell you that I believe that the government is going to be in tremendous shape with the future acquisition workforce because of the caliber of people coming in, and they just need time to grow. Specifically, in terms of initiatives that we have going on with respect to the workforce. What is the workforce, first of all? It is contracting folks. It is program management folks. There are folks called contracting officers, technical representatives. Those are the 3 categories of people that make up the acquisition workforce as defined by the Office of Management and Budget. What we've done in DHS is we've taken that sort of to the next level. We do have contracting folks. We have 1,421 who are basically under my purview. We have program management personnel, and as I mentioned, we have more than 500 programs, so roughly that number of program managers. And then contracting officers, technical representatives, we would have, if we have 18,000 live contracts, we would have some subset of that would be our contracting officers, technical representatives that are out there. We've added some other career fields that we feel are necessary, especially because we've got programs of large programs to manage. And those are cost estimating, life cycle logistics, test and evaluation folks, and then financial management folks. The idea is this, is pretty simple. In contracting, we have the 1,400 or so, and they do all the contracting things. In program management, you want a program manager, you want a contracting officer's technical representative, you also want a cost estimator, you also want a logistician, you want a test and evaluator. You want all of these folks around your major program. So we have developed certification programs within my office for folks who are entering these fields, as well as within the intern program, we've hired contracting folks, program management, cost estimators, systems engineers, and we're developing them from the ground up. In order for all of these folks who make up our acquisition workforce to get certified, we have a significant number of training courses which are provided by my organization, which lead to certifications. We offer more than 340 courses through our workforce training program, and there are 70 different courses that all of the folks in the acquisition workforce across DHS have access to.
It's certainly encouraging that you're seeing so much talent coming into the organization, but with such a complex mission, I would imagine that it's also important to balance that with retaining some of that institutional knowledge and more senior experience. So could you talk to me a little bit about some of the things you're doing relative to retention?
In terms of retaining the institutional knowledge, there's a couple of things that we're doing. One is the newer generation that's coming in is being mentored and coached by those who are still in the workforce. Those who are still in the workforce who are senior seem to be staying longer, so we're seeing the attrition rate actually go down overall across the board, and maybe that's because of the economic climate. The statistics are that the attrition rate is actually going down. The other thing is we have the ability, in DHS we do, to hire folks who have already retired. And so we're doing a little bit of that. So we're doing a little bit of everything to keep the workforce together. But I will tell you, there is going to be a phenomenal acquisition workforce across government. And DHS is going to be the leader in that in the next 5 to 7 years. And this is the reason why. In the 90s, DOD had, quote-unquote, professionalized their workforce by imposing an educational requirement and a training requirement. Roughly around 2000, the civilian agencies followed suit with that. And so when I came into government 20 years ago, there were maybe 60% who did not have college degrees, 40 did. Today, it is probably, and I don't have the statistics in front of me, but it's probably 80% who do and 20% who don't. The training requirements have become more rigid, more expansive. And of course, we have all this mentoring and coaching that's going on. That coupled with experience over the next 5 to 7 years, you're going to be dealing, the private sector is going to be pleased to know that they're going to be dealing with a very highly educated, sophisticated acquisition workforce. I think it's going to be great for everybody, good for the country.
There's been an increased interest by the federal government in the use of prizes and challenges, and that's a trend that is anticipated to continue to grow. To that end, how has DHS used alternative approaches to formal contracting and procurement processes?
So, I guess the way I want to address that is, as I mentioned before, I have four priorities: quality people, quality contracting, quality program support, and quality and effective engagement with industry. I have about 25 metrics to measure, how is this place any better since the day I walked in here? And those 25 metrics are linked to my four priorities. Now, we have two recognition programs that we use for our personnel, and guess what? They're all linked to moving those metrics in the right direction. So I'll just talk about a couple of them. One is our Small Business Awards program. Again, we have a phenomenal small business program. One neat story is outside of the Veterans Department, we are the only agency in government who exceeded their service-disabled veteran goal. Very pleased to say that the Secretary established a goal of doing about $1 billion of business with veterans last year, and we are carrying that forward again this year. Very important for our country at this time for us. So we've got a robust Small Business Awards program that essentially gives incentive to the entire acquisition workforce to help us meet those goals in the most appropriate manner. The other program we have is the DHS Competition Excellence Awards. And as I mentioned, something like 80% of our contracts are competed. Again, that helps us get a better deal. We have that awards program in place, as well as an overall acquisition excellence awards program. As I keep mentioning, one of my primary jobs is to make sure that the government gets a good deal. $20 billion you're spending, how do you know you're getting a good deal? Strategic sourcing certainly is a big piece of that and some other things. But ultimately, as our folks do get these good deals, I've got to find ways to that is the challenge. The reward is within our awards programs.
George, I'd like to discuss how you work with the DHS components. We've talked a lot about central office, but I understand the seven DHS components retain their procurement functions and report in a direct line to their mission supervisors, which is called functional integration, I understand it. What are some of the benefits, and how does this approach benefit DHS's overall acquisitions strategy? And more importantly, is there any ideas of going beyond this sort of oversight into a more centralized approach?
We have one of the strongest what we call lines of business in acquisition in DHS. So where and here's how the reporting actually works. Nine contracting shops, $19 billion is spent across the nine contracting shops. About $6 billion of that $19 billion that directly reports to me. So there's $6 billion right there. So the rest of them, seven in the components, they don't directly report to me. However, here's how it works that makes it almost the next best thing to them reporting to me. First of all, I hand each one of the heads of contracting in those seven organizations within the components a goal and priority letter at the beginning of a fiscal year. Guess what? That relates to the 25 metrics, my four priorities. And it gives them very specifics of where I need them to generally head. They agree to that. We go through the year, and there are various checkpoints that I have where they come in. We look at a dashboard of sorts and, again, the metrics, and we want to make sure that things are on track. And then we get to the hot part of the year where a lot of money comes in, and you've got to make sure that you're spending it, getting a good deal, meeting your small business goals, competing things, buying green, and a whole bunch of other things, as well as continuing to effectively engage with industry under very, very challenging circumstances. And while we're not perfect, we're going to strive for perfection in that area. At the end of the year, I have input into the performance appraisals of all of the heads of contracting. They do listen, they do cooperate, and they're actually very, very fantastic folks who work extremely hard. In addition to that, all of the big strategic sourcing buys, where we're driving more and more of our money through, are done out of my office that directly reports to me. So very comfortable with the structure as is, and feel like with all of those items in place that we're moving in the right direction.
Well, given the significant fiscal and economic pressures facing the country, a number of agency heads are embarking on department-wide cost-cutting efforts, particularly with a focus on business operations. Would you tell us more about your efforts to cut costs and realize savings, and what are some of the key initiatives being pursued in the procurement and acquisition area?
We have two major cost-cutting efforts in DHS. One is the DHS Secretary's Efficiency Review, and the second is the Office of Management Budget Acquisition Savings Initiative. The cornerstone of both of those is our strategic sourcing program, the savings that we achieve through our strategic sourcing program. Again, we have many initiatives, strategic sourcing initiatives within the department, as well as we are a leader and partner with the Office of Management and Budget in their government-wide strategic sourcing initiatives.
So I'd be interested to know how you empower your employees, and more particularly, how do you lead them to understand the changes that you're incurring and foster a culture of performance?
That's a great question. When I came in as the chief procurement officer, one of the key things with leadership is to have a clear vision and a message and then actually communicate that message where folks understand it. So I've mentioned a few times about my four priorities. And in 11 months, we've established the four priorities and we're doing many good things, but I want to institutionalize them. The mechanism that I'll be using is my strategic plan, which is essentially a 5-year look of over the waterfront of acquisition. and specifics on how we're going to drive all the things that we need to drive in order to be a successful organization. That plan will be complete within the next month or so, and it'll be delivered to every employee, at which time I will speak to it to all of our stakeholders, which include everybody internally as well as industry and the many other stakeholders that we have. So essentially, if I tie these back to my four priorities, I could say a success that's actually happening right now as I put out the five-year vision. Strategic sourcing, so in contracting, we are saving money, getting a better deal, or we're pushing to that. Within people, we have our intern program, a couple hundred. We graduated a couple classes this year. Now they're landing into the components and doing good things. We plan on graduating about 30 folks a year from here on out. That will land in and replenish our workforce. And again, the attrition rate is actually getting lower. Our small business program, which is stellar and rated as an A by the Small Business Administration last year, and we're looking to get that again. We have a little ways to go, 10 more days in the fiscal year. And then the last item, which I got a chance to elaborate on, which is part of the Undersecretary's acquisition enhancements to the front end and back end of acquisition, and that's the establishment of the realignment of the Program Accountability and Risk Management Office, led by Dr. Cedric Sims. And he and his staff, under the Undersecretary's leadership, have done some tremendous things. The one that I want to highlight again is, there are many, the Integrated Investment Lifecycle, which, incidentally, is one in which all of the chiefs have worked together to build this integrated investment lifecycle. We're all invested in a better way of managing investments, how they come into play and then how they're managed. And it's very interesting to see how the undersecretary has brought in all of the chiefs to bring this to life. And then the piece that I mentioned before, which is this this fantastic decision support tool, which I'll tell you, I believe it's cutting edge. I'm not sure any other agency has a tool like this that essentially takes 15 criteria of a program, and we're adding to that to ultimately on the back end say, here's the health of this program. And key decision makers at the department, now that you have this, you know, you can make solid decisions based on empirical data.
What does the future hold for acquisition in the U.S. Department of Homeland Security? We will ask Dr. Nick Nyack, DHS's Chief Procurement Officer, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Each edition of the Business of Government magazine has as its focus the core mission of the IBM Center, connecting research to practice as a means to improve public management. We do this by bringing together insights and perspectives blended with an equal measure of practicality and reflection from an array of government leaders, public managers, thinkers, and practitioners. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In an era of fiscal contraction, today's leaders face unique challenges that present many difficult choices. It is a period that, while imposing many constraints, simultaneously confers as many opportunities to make a difference, introduce new ways of managing, explore pragmatic approaches, and pursue management imperatives that help government leaders perform in an ever-challenging, complex environment. In our latest edition, we bring you conversations with FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, outlining the Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen. Rafael Boris, DHS Undersecretary for Management, discusses how the department is turning its one DHS vision into a reality. Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York, discusses how the city is shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and efficient. We offer perspectives on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century from Professor Joseph S. Nye Jr. and General Anthony Zinni, former commander of the U.S. Central Command. Our forum presents seven management imperatives that government leaders must pursue to be successful in this new environment. All of this and so much more in the Spring-Summer 2011 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Nick Nyack, Chief Procurement Officer within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Also joining us from IBM is George Cruiser. So, Nick, I talked to many of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnerships among agencies and with the private sector to achieve mission results. How are you leveraging partnerships to improve management operations and program outcomes?
Very happy you asked that question. I'm going to give you three examples that are in play for us. The first one is the collaboration and partnership internally under the Undersecretary for Management, Undersecretary Boris. I think he's done a tremendous job in terms of horizontally bringing the chiefs together in a number of initiatives. But in my world, in acquisition in particular, it's just wonderful to have the cohesion horizontally amongst the chiefs. And he's done that in a couple of ways. One is establishing a very small office called the Office of Management Integration, led by Dr. Ken Buck. And essentially coming in, that was the Undersecretary's way of bringing us together as chiefs across the department at headquarters, as well as driving integration vertically in our business lines into the components. And we just have a fantastic team who have worked together to create things like the integrated investment lifecycle. Another sort of strategic partnership that I've mentioned several times is strategic sourcing, and that really is a partnership. So where my office ultimately gets credit for establishing the strategically sourced vehicles and we message out on all the success and the savings, it truly is all of those contracting shops, the 9 contracting shops that are under my purview and within the components, as well as many wonderful program folks who work together to bring these strategic sourcing initiatives to life. They sound very simple on the surface. There is a lot of work that goes into really making them happen. So, for instance, as I mentioned before, the detection equipment. This is one where some issues have been raised in general about detection equipment, but we are about to head down a road where we're going to bring all the right folks together and we're going to see what of detection equipment we can actually strategically source. And then finally, the one partnership and collaboration area that you will hear me constantly talk about, and I will get, I will be even providing more detail in the future in various forms, is the connection with industry. If half of the discretionary budget is spent on connecting with industry and contracting with industry, that is, it's just essential that we have effective engagement. We do a number of things. Coming in the door, in terms of connecting with industry, we did a certain amount. The Office of Management and Budget put out a Mythbusters concept through the IT reform plan, and that came out with some interesting and helpful items in terms of engaging with industry, and I want to take it to the next level. So you're going to hear me speak a lot more about that partnership. And as we go through our day-to-day business, there are going to be some one-offs in terms of having maybe not as effective communication as we'd like, but I want everybody to know that this is going to be a priority. It will be institutionalized, and they can look forward to incremental progress over the years to come.
Now I want to move to my favorite part, which is really looking at the future. So I'm going to ask you to gaze into your crystal ball and tell me what you see as some of the both challenges and opportunities in the future and how you envision changing your organization to adapt to those.
So I'm going to talk about it globally, and then I'll speak specifically within my four priorities about challenges and opportunities. Globally, acquisition and specifically procurement, government spending went from about $200 billion to $500 billion over the last decade. And I think what we can see, what we've seen here in the last fiscal year, and I think we're going to see it again in the next fiscal year, is a slight decline in the overall spending of government. Not sure how that'll come out in DHS. We're watching it very closely. But I do think it'll be a flattening or a slight decline. And that means workload, so to speak. I do think that there will be more strategic sourcing across government at the Office of Management and Budget level, as well as within departments, and that'll translate into less contracts overall. I do think, as I mentioned before, that you can look forward to an outstanding and phenomenal acquisition workforce in the next 5 to 7 years in government, across government. And then the last thing I would say is, and one thing that I want to drive in terms of the information technology age, is, and obviously there's so many things that we're driving there. There's virtual workplace and telecommuting, but within acquisition, I'd like to see an expanded use of something I would kind of call electronic catalog. I don't think that we can continue to ask for more and more people. In fact, I'm not big on asking for more. I think we've got to find ways to be more efficient. And in my world, the use or expanded use of an electronic catalog would allow my folks to focus more on the higher dollar value, more complex acquisitions, and get the lower dollar value transactions out of their hands and in the hands of the customer, which would provide faster customer service and probably reduced cost and greater efficiency. So overall, I'll tell you, I think it's going to be for acquisition folks in the government, it's a fantastic time. There may be some things that happen to government benefits that might make it a little bit more interesting for those who are coming into government. But if you do come into government and you're excited about the challenge of public service, then I think it's going to be a phenomenal time. And then very specifically within my four priorities, under quality people, the challenge is always getting and developing quality people, retaining them, keeping them excited. And I think we are going to do a fantastic job of that in DHS. In contracting, the challenge is how do you get a good deal? And we've got a number of initiatives in place to ensure that we're going to get a good deal. In program management, it's the challenge of you don't want a program to go south. And as I mentioned, we have the integrated investment lifecycle and more real-time insight into our programs there. And the last one is effective engagement with industry, and that's continuous. So I'm very much looking forward to going out and speaking to various industry forums so that I can get a sense of how we're doing as we do more and more and more. Is it the right more and more and more? And I look forward to doing that as well. So I think overall it's going to be a fantastic time. And as we mentioned about leadership initially, it's just constantly keeping an eye on the environment and adapting to the change.
Nick, before we close today, I would like to get you to elaborate. What advice would you give to someone who's thinking about a career in public service?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, you have to have interest in public service. Secondly, and I do always mention this to folks who come into the government, financially you can be okay. It's important for folks to know. I mean, you're living life and work's a subset of life. So financially you can be okay. One of the things I do with all of our interns is I sit down and talk to them about retirement because I want them to know the big picture and that they can be okay in public service and really do well and have a very, very good life. That would be the first thing. The other thing that I always tell them is the number one attribute that I think will lead to success is they've got to be likable, and you have to treat every single person extremely well. If you do that, that'll give you the time to do the second thing that you should do, and that is put in hard work. One of the things I've noticed at DHS, which is inspiring, is the majority of the people at DHS across business lines and across the agency into the components easily work 60-plus hours at a minimum. And then all DHS employees are 24/7 on call if there's an emergency, which is very inspiring and maybe something that a lot of Americans are not exposed to. So being likable, working extremely hard, these are the things that I will tell anybody who is interested in public service.
Well, Nick, I want to thank you for your time today, but more importantly, George and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Thank you very much.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Dr. Nick Nyack, Chief Procurement Officer within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. My co-host from IBM has been George Cruiser. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.
What is the military health system's quadruple aim? How is DoD ensuring it has a healthy and fit force? And what is DoD doing to reduce costs without sacrificing the quality of care delivered? Join host Michael Keegan on the next The Business of Government Hour as he explores these questions and so much more with Dr. Jonathan Woodson, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs within the U.S. Department of Defense.